Yes, it's Friday, and this is the Teach Computing podcast. We're now in our second year, and my name is Alan O'Donoghue, and we record this podcast every week to help teachers who are considering teaching GCSE computing, or teachers who are already teaching it, to kind of get their head around what they're doing. Now, I make lots of mistakes in my teaching, and I have some nice things that happen, and then we share this in the podcast. And today, I've been at the 10 Centre in Salford, and we've had 33 teachers, and I've got Becky here. So Becky, you work at the 10 Centre here in Salford.
I do. So we work supporting the professional development of teachers and all those that support learning in Salford. So today was a brilliant opportunity for us to enthuse, inspire and challenge some of our professionals in terms of how they approach computing, how they deliver it to their young people, and do that in an exciting, cooperative and collaborative way. It's been a fantastic afternoon and everybody's just got so much out of it.
I was surprised there were so many people. There was 33 teachers and we had 20 or so last week doing exactly the same thing. Why do you think all these teachers are coming out of the woodwork? What is it that's driving them, do you think, to come here?
Yeah. I think it's two things. Partly, they have to deliver this, mm-hmm. and there is nowhere to hide. It's got to be done. And I think for a lot of them, it's kind of, well, I've got to do it. I've been told it's me that's leading on it, and actually, I don't have any expertise. And it doesn't feel like there's any traditional place to find that expertise. So 5 years ago, they might have gone to the local authority ICT coordinator, but they're obviously not there anymore. And also, there's a real appetite, I think, for teachers now to kind of realise that the best resource they've got are their colleagues. So actually, if they work together, if they try and problem solve collaboratively, they're going to get a lot further than they would on their own.
That was clearly one of the things I was trying to do this afternoon, to help the teachers realise how they can develop their own capacity and work together. We did some evaluations at the end. Can you remember, was there any particular comments that people were saying about whether they thought they got any value out of the event?
I think that's kind of a testament to how great the afternoon was, actually, because the main comments that kind of came back from people were, firstly, that they weren't made to feel like they were the idiot in the corner, that everybody was kind of in it together, and that there wasn't any sense of, well, you're not as good as anybody else. So that was great. It was really inclusive. And the other thing was kind of a testament to yourself in terms of how inspiring and engaging they found it, and part of that was because I think it was hands-on. So we have a program of loaning stuff as well, so the number of requests we've had for people to borrow Raspberry Pis, Makey Makeys, all kinds of other bits of kit to go and have a go. And that's the brilliant thing, the amount of evaluation forms that then said, yep, I'm going to have a go at this. So it's kind of taken that fear away, and I think one of our colleagues mentioned that, you know, during the course of the afternoon you could feel that fear dissipating.
Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, brilliant.
So what do you think will happen next? I mean, you've got those evaluation forms now. Are you going to put a particular program together, or have you already decided what's going to be on the program?
So there is a program just in terms of a number of days of resource and activity for both secondary and primary teachers, but actually what that contains will be driven by the practitioners themselves. So there'll be a needs analysis going out tomorrow to all the people that came. There was one that went out last week, asking them, okay, what are your priorities? What do you want us to concentrate on first? We'll do that. We'll solve real problems with you. But actually, that's part of a rolling program of support, so it's not just now and then gone, it's an ongoing
process. So you're going to try and have a tailor-made program to suit the needs that they identify, rather than say, we think you need this and we think you need that as well.
Yeah, okay. I think teachers suffer too much from being told what they should do and when they should do it.
So anybody wants to know more about these activities that are happening in Salford, is there a way that they can get in touch or find out more about it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So the easiest way to do it at the moment would be to either find us on Twitter, just look for 10 Centre, or email us, 10centre@rm.com. Or if they're already part of the CAS community, the Computing at School community, they should hopefully start to find some of our schools involved in that.
10 is an acronym, is it? For
it is. It stands for Transforming Education Networks. But really, we're just known as 10. Everybody knows us as 10. We're on Twitter, we're on the net. You can find our website or email us.
Becky, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Now, I've just zoomed across the northwest from Salford over to Preston, my hometown now. And I've crashed into the open evening at Archbishop. And we've got a new principal teacher, head of computing and ICT.
Head of ICT, head of computing.
Laura Ridings,
yep, that's me.
So you're just new in the role here.
I'm new in the role, started 3 weeks ago.
and you teach in GCSE computing.
For the first time this year at Archbishop Temple, they're doing GCSE computing, and I'm teaching it.
Is it absolutely terrifying?
Yes, but what's life without a bit of terror?
Yes, you need to take that risk.
Absolutely. Everyone should be a risk taker.
So, you've done a little bit of programming yourself in the past. You've dipped into Python and Java and a little bit. And you used to teach A-level computing.
I did teach A-level computing at Bacon Rotsall Grammar. We've looked at Visual Basic even, at Java. Well, I'm teaching myself Java because I want to make apps. And we're doing Python here, which was new to me, but it's
But I've just been looking at some of your students over there, and they seem like they just know exactly.
Because they're all absolute geniuses. Every single one of my computing students are all fantastic. I've got a class that's just it's all boys apart from one girl. God bless her.
Oh.
You know, but I mean, I sit there having a laugh and joke with the lads, and she's very quiet. But it's good. We'll get the boy side out of her as soon as.
And have we got any plans? Anything that you're kind of wondering about to try and encourage more girls into the GCSE? Catch them early, haven't you?
You do have to catch them early, and especially with the year sevens and that, and bringing in this idea of being able to create new computer games themselves. And, you know, how easy it is to make a drag and drop game. Yeah. So if they want to do the fashion games, you know, that girls love so much. Well, actually, even my nephew, my nephew is four years old.
He wears clothes as well, does he?
He loves the dress-up games, yeah. Yeah, a bit worried about him, but never mind. Off topic. Getting them at that age, getting them involved, just being enthusiastic, because I'm a bit of a gaming geek myself.
And
just being enthusiastic, I think that's the first hurdle, really.
And being
really,
a role model to girls, I think it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes have a bit of an issue with being called a role model. I feel a bit...
It's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
Ooh, you know, they're all looking up to you. You know, you're the one that's going to lead them and all of that. So, you were mentioning something earlier. You're not using Word documents anymore.
I'm not.
What's this all about?
Word documents are a dirty word in this department.
So what do you do? What are you using?
I'm a real fan of Adobe products.
Sure.
I love Adobe products. They integrate so well with each other. So I use Adobe InDesign now to create all my documents.
So you can create interactive PDFs, can't you?
You can create interactive PDFs. Yeah. You can just create a normal worksheet in it. It's easier to lay things out than it is in Word. It's just more responsive. And then I can just create a box, right-click, make interactive, turn it into an interactive text box, export it as a PDF, boom, you're done.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I've never been a massive fan of Adobe products. I was when I worked in industry, but in school, because the thing I always see is that barrier that they can't use them themselves at home unless they spend, you know, a few hundred pounds. Have you found any ways around that?
Well, the thing is, by using the Adobe, by using the PDFs, Adobe Reader is free, and that's all they need to make them work. So they download them in Adobe Reader, save it, send it to me via the virtual learning environment,
and then
no paper involved or anything. And I'm a happy person.
Great. So you're just new to the Preston area?
Yes.
And I'm hoping we can persuade you to come over to some of our Preston Computing at School hub
meetings. Definitely will. But new to Preston, but I am a Lancashire girl.
Through and through.
Thumb up for the Northerners.
Thank you very much.
Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Wow, it's been a busy couple of days. You've just been listening to an interview with Laura Riding at Archbishop Temple. And now, who's in the room?
It's Vicky Dodd.
V-I-K-K-I-V-I-L-L-E.
Vicky Vale on Twitter.
Not Vicky Vile.
No, Vicky Vile.
It's got more L's than that.
Now.
Yeah, we have, yeah. So, wow, what a busy few days it's been.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, Friday last week, I didn't really see you because you headed off down to...
I was in Coventry. At the PyCon UK, Python Conference UK, with a load of software developers, Python developers, the core Python team, and lots of other people, and it was crazy.
But some people would say, hang on, this is the PyCon UK conference. It runs for 4 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
I only managed till Sunday.
Why would a teacher
want to hang around with a lot of Python devs?
Well, on Saturday, there was the education track. On Friday, we attended some workshops that were just kind of informative. It was really interesting just to be there, like on Piglet, Python Piglet. But then on the Saturdays, the education track sponsored by the Bank of America. And it was absolutely fantastic. Basically, loads of Python developers came just to listen to teachers and me talk about what teachers need from them, how they can help schools, how they can help provide professional development and training and support for teachers, and showing us loads of cool stuff. We had Martin O'Hanlon, who does the Python coding into Minecraft.
And he has a website, stuffaboutcode.com.
Yes, stuffaboutcode.com. He did a fantastic session on Minecraft, and even the Python developers, we had a huge room full of professional Python developers, totally and utterly captivated with how they could use Minecraft. We had Ben Smith from AKS as well. He was doing the Minecraft session. We had the Bank of America provided quadcopters, which then we controlled from Python to Minecraft, so it appeared as if they were being controlled via Minecraft.
Whoa, slow down.
Sorry.
No, Python, yeah. Right, code, text-based programming language.
Yeah.
Minecraft, 3D space, you can go in. Mm-hmm. With Python, what's this got to do with quadcopters? How do two fit together?
Well, the quadcopter, it can be controlled via an app. And what the Python developers had done is written a module that allowed it to be import, a Python module for it to be imported into Python, and then you could then use the Minecraft code that then controlled the quadcopter.
This sounds like really complicated. It must have been like thousands of lines of code or something.
No, it wasn't. It was literally a page of code.
Just a page?
Just like I would say, what, 20, 25 lines of code?
And somebody's probably shared this online even.
I'm not sure if it's been shared yet online, because it was something that was developed on Saturday.
Wow.
Well, they'd already written the code. They could control it kind of in Python, I think. Mm-hmm. They were doing that. But then we asked, can we not do that in Minecraft? And then another thing we've asked for since then, Ben Smith's contacted him, was he asked for, well, can we not do this with a Kinect? So a Microsoft Kinect.
Wow.
To
a Raspberry Pi.
not necessarily a Raspberry Pi, yeah. But Python Kinect to Pi game.
Yes.
To a quadcopter. Because you've got Kinect to Scratch already,
great.
So you could have Kinect.
So you've got like a real world interface to the computer within a real world output, which is a quadcopter flying around.
Yeah.
I've just remembered there's a discussion thread on the computing at school community at the moment about safety, about using quadcopters in school spaces.
Salim from the Bank of America. Yeah, he was thinking, what are the health and safety? And I think I replied to it actually. And as long as you've completed the necessary risk assessments and that students have been quite carefully trained on how to fly it and control it and are being well supervised, I don't really see there being any different to doing a science experiment or in a DT lab. It was absolutely fantastic. And the children who came on the Sunday, it was demonstrated to them, were just absolutely captivated.
So on the Sunday, we had I came down because I wasn't able to join you on the Saturday, but we had the Raspberry Jam at PyCon UK, and that was just fantastic. We've had some events, we've had like 100 to 300 people there, but this one, I would say throughout the day, we had about 100, but 30 of those were children. And we had 16 boys and 15 girls. So it was a good gender balance. You mentioned Bank of America. There was quite a lot of Bank of America staff there as well.
There were, They were really interested in the education track. Obviously, you have this corporate responsibility program, and it's kind of how can we help you, basically. But they were just so helpful. And sometimes teachers are a bit trepidatious about approaching professional programmers, because it can be kind of, not condescending, but you feel a bit daft, and there's things that you need to ask and you're worried about them being stupid questions. And basically no question was too small or too stupid.
There is no such thing as stupid questions.
And there really genuinely wasn't on Saturday, on Sunday. There was no question that was too stupid for them. And they were just desperate to know how they could help and what they could do. And it was just fantastic.
Wow. So when we ran the Raspberry Jam on the Sunday, my experience was, it seemed like a lot of the Python developers that were taking part in the main conference during the day, they seemed to drift in. And well, a lot of them drifted in. They didn't seem to drift out. They hung around for a while. Yes.
They didn't want to leave. Yeah. And at one point, we checked on the Saturday, actually, and what we were doing in the education track, which kind of, you know, we did a recon and see who which rooms were the busiest of workshops that were going on. And it was ours. It was the education track. It was really popular with the developers.
So it wasn't like a formal sit-down training session.
No, we didn't do anything like that.
A lot more interactive.
It was, yeah, we got them in Minecraft and then we had a general discussion, really, and went about the new curriculum that's coming into Force 2014, which they were really interested in. And to be honest, you make the assumption as a teacher that everybody knows about it. If you're a software developer, you know about education and what's changing.
Because you've been to a school.
Yeah, they didn't know. They didn't know. And there was a lot of people there who've got children who would like to help their children's school. Because one of the common threads was, I would like my children to receive a good computing education. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, okay, you need to help them then.
The other thing was, I spoke to a couple of the children that were there, and I was asking them what they'd done with their Raspberry Pi.
Did you see the bee and the flower?
Oh,
the flower
wow, bee. That was brilliant.
It was absolutely fantastic.
We took some photographs, which we tweeted. Excuse me. Nicholas Tolliver, who's fantastic, and he helped bring basically a lot of this stuff together.
The education track was his baby.
Because I couldn't be there on the Saturday for the education track, not because of that, but he happened to record a lot of interviews with people, and on the Sunday, and they're all on YouTube channel. So he's like tweet lots about those so people can see them.
If you're looking on YouTube for any of the videos, I think you have to search for it through Nick's email address, to be honest, because they're not under PyCon UK at the moment.
So I keep thinking, when we do this podcast, we should have like podcast notes and we can put links in so people can see them.
I know Ben Smith's done a video with the quadcopter to Minecraft under AKS, and Nick's videos, they you might find in the same way.
So that was the weekend. Should we talk a little bit about what we've been doing with our GCSE computing classes?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I'm still doing this little man computer task, which is the investigation assignment with my year 11s, and it's not easy. But I like the fact that it's a real challenge and it makes them have to think. And so I've done a little bit of the preparation where I've been showing them what the little man computer looks like. And we've been talking about, I mean, there's a couple of barriers that I've seen that they've struggled to get, like this idea of an accumulator. Mm. So the accumulator is just, it's always a single value and it always holds it temporarily. Yeah. So that when you take an input, whatever was in the accumulator beforehand gets replaced by this input. Yeah. And that kind of just about seems to be sinking in. And there was a point where we had a nightmare lesson where we couldn't log in and we couldn't get anything on Tuesday, which kind of put us back a little bit. You know, with those let days where it's like the wasp in the classroom or the snowing outside. And then I thought, never mind. So I came up with a new plan today about how we were going to model the little man computer in the class. We were going to have instructions on cards and run around and all this kind of thing. And we were just about to get started and then the firebell went.
Yeah.
So we had to evacuate the classroom.
It's fantastic when things like that happen. But there's been a discussion on CAS about the little man computer as well, I've seen, and the controlled assessment for the practical investigation. And some people saying that that's the hardest one of all the practical investigations that you could possibly have chosen, Alan.
I wouldn't disagree with that, but I tell you what, everybody eventually gets it. And when you get that, it's not quite as momentous as an earthquake.
But if you look at the little man computer, it looks really quite unfathomable.
Because it's so abstract.
It's really abstract. It's a really abstract concept. But what you're saying is it actually teaches them about machine code as well.
Absolutely.
At the same time, which they need to know for the theory examination.
Yeah.
Then you've got the App Inventor controlled assessment as well, which is easier, and it still teaches them the theory about the differences between event-driven programming and high-level programming.
I think a year ago, when I first started teaching this, I might have gone for the App Inventor task because it might have seemed, I mean, in theory, none of them should be easier or more difficult than the others.
It's about how kids learn and what kids find engaging.
That's right.
You put App Inventor against the little man computer.
I'll be completely honest, they are not finding the little man computer enjoyable or exciting. But just, I don't know. It's just slowly, one by one, you can see as they get it, it's like, wow, I've got it. Oh, I understand how it works now. It's a silence. We're supposed to do this control. Oh, sorry, sir. You know.
Do you impose silence in your controlled assessment?
I do. Because
there's a space in the marks scheme for group work.
No, well, we do. But when we do group work, it's not about the control assessment. So there are some other, so like with the Little Man computer assignment, there's some, it directs you to a website, which has got some examples. So we've tried the examples together and we've done them in Pinky Partners, we've done them on their own, we've done them as groups. And we can talk and give each other as much support with those examples. But absolutely, when it comes to the control assessment, I mean, I have to be able to say it's the child's own unaided work. They haven't got somebody else's work, they haven't plagiarised. In fact, that's another thread that's been going on. What some teachers have done is they've given like a private username and password, so and you only log in for that session. You can't access this thing or the other. I mean, it's up to you what you manage in your classroom, but generally I've got them working in silence, sometimes with a 5-minute break in the middle, and then they go back to their own work.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about your year 10s?
Year 10 has been challenging for the past 3 weeks due to the huge range of abilities
that's
in
been
terms
causing
of knowledge.
You some problems you were saying,
it's just stressful because previously when I've delivered it, I've been quite used to they've got very little programming experience, but obviously we've got at least two students in that class who could probably complete a programming controlled assessment now.
So I think I've caused you some
problems.
Yeah. Because in year 9, we started teaching Python in year 7 and then year 8, and it's last year some year 9s they just took off. I said, go for it.
But then there was other classes that didn't have the same experiences, and it's caused some motivation issues. It's caused a bit of bitterness, if you like, but among some in the class when they're looking across the classroom and they can see somebody who's, you know, racing away on Python, they're like, but I don't know how to do that. Why don't I know how to do that? So new tack next week, different seating plan, and basically need to bring those that aren't as much as they can up to scratch.
To put some sort of structure in place where they feel supported, not just relying on you all the time.
So we can put something in place for them next week. But last lessons we did flow charts. Or moving on from algorithms, because I did say last year I felt that I did that too late and it needs to be embedded to prepare them for the controlled assessment, you know, getting the algorithms down, pseudocode, even stepwise refinements as well. We've done that. So we did a flowchart for making a raspberry jam sandwich.
Raspberry jam, of course.
It was particularly raspberry jam.
Now, at the risk of telling my younger assistant how to suck eggs...
Mm.
I actually think you're a far better teacher than I am. But...
Go on.
But I'm going to say this anyway. Sometimes, because my year 11 are a mixed ability class.
Yeah.
So we've got some children that, you know, if they get an E or a D grade, that's going to be fantastic. And there's going to be others. I'll be disappointed if they don't get an A star. One of the things I did last year was I put them in teams where the team could only succeed if all four in the team had completed it. But there was other sort of limitations. So basically, if they had an A star in their group, the A star person, and I wouldn't call them an A star, but the A star was not allowed to touch the keyboard or get in. So they have to support each other because it's do it for the team. The team have to. And
the only thing I'd say with that, and that's fantastic, is I still don't know the personalities of these kids. I've only seen them seven times, whereas you do. And My experience so far of that class is that they need some perhaps class building activities to enable them all to work together nicely.
You know, those relationships.
You've got to play nice first. They haven't got those relationships in that class yet.
So let's come back to GCSE computing in our next episode.
Okay.
Now, tell us about Code Club, because you had a meeting this morning at one of our partner primaries.
My second meeting with one of our partner primaries, that's St Anthony's, on St Anthony's Drive, St Anthony's Catholic Primary School. Basically, Code Club is launching there on Thursday the 3rd of October, and I had the great news today that after doing an assembly on it, they've got 20 students signed up with another 12 on a waiting list for a place in Code
Club.
So
they've got 32 that want to take
32
part.
32 that want to take part in Code Club at the primary school. So basically, that's the bell, folks.
Oh no, I'm going to have to go off to my lesson in a minute.
So, and we've got another two Code Clubs launching as well by
that's
October
brilliant.
After.
So you're going in, supporting the primary schools to get their Code Club established, and we're helping to find them volunteers as well.
Yeah, helping to find them volunteers. Edgehill University have volunteered. Some of theirs are PGC students in the locality. Thank you, Dawn. And then we're also providing the Scratch training for their ICT coordinators to enable them to deliver and support the Code Club as well and their other staff.
You know what? I'm thinking So it's on next Thursday. I think I should bring my camera down and my podcasting equipment.
That's good. Yeah,
and interview some of the children
and the
teachers and ask them.
Definitely, let's do
well,
that.
Well, let's try to definitely.
Well, next Thursday, what we're going to do is we're going to do an introductory session that shows them the potential of Scratch and what Code Club will be about. So it's going to be a bit of a wow, hopefully. Mm-hmm. We might have Connector Scratch going, Makey Makey, and hopefully some Pico boards, which reminds me, and get it all going for an hour.
I think this is fantastic. See, I read so much online about Code Club and I see all the tweets and I'm a really big fan. To know I'm going to have one down the road just 100 metres away from our school.
They're popping up, they're definitely popping up. I know quite a few have been set up recently in Preston area.
Right, we're going to wrap up the podcast there because I've got to go and get off to my class. Thank you very much for listening. This is a podcast recorded by Alan O'Donoghue, techno teacher, T-E-K-N-O teacher. And
Vicky Dodd, that's V-I-K-K-I-V-I-L-L-E
on Twitter. And we don't think we're experts in teaching computing. We started and we're trying things out. And as you've heard, we make some mistakes along the way. But I hope you like listening to the podcast. And if you've got any thoughts, comments, suggestions, send us an email or tweet us. Thank you for listening.
Bye. Bye.